My name is Mikkel Mørk Einhøj, and I work with Azure Developer Experience in the Developer Division in Microsoft.
And I'm Kamaljeet. I'm also a Program Manager in the Cloud Developer Experience team for Azure. And we are also responsible for building all the Azure SDKs in different languages. And we have the Azure SDKs in C#, Java, Node.js, and Python, Ruby, Go, and PHP. So we have a pretty broad set of SDKs that you can use to develop on Azure. Also, we have command line support both in PowerShell and command line in Bash. And that is what we will go into and look at today. So I'll come back and show that part later, the open source and the non-Microsoft tools side of it. But Mikkel will kind of take you from here now.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about that cloud and what it means to us as developers. We think of cloud as giving us new superpowers. Just one thing to think about is how resource constraints is sort of becoming a thing of the past. Like if you've been used to install Windows servers, configure security, harden them, install IIS and .NET framework, making sure everything's configured just to have a website running. And then comparing that to just publishing a website into app services in Azure, and how all of that goes away. Now, if you haven't experienced that yet, you should go and try it out, and we'll give you some resources on how you can do that. Or hopefully throughout the demonstrations that we're doing today, you see how easy things are. Now, the whole idea behind this and what we want to lead you through is that the superpowers that this brings to us is that we don't have to care so much about all the resources anymore. We don't have to care about the servers and the operating systems. And it really gives us that time and flexibility to focus on the applications we're building and making sure that they're just right for our business and the purpose that they have to, the value that they bring to us. So how is all of this impacting you as a developer? You might wonder, what is it that I need to do differently? Well, if I'm used to developing my web application, I just deploy it to the server that's maybe right under my desk or in the server room in the basement. How is it different when things move into the cloud? So our finest job is to make sure that you're empowered to achieve more. And we really want to focus on bringing the cloud to you with fingertips. We don't want to make it an issue whether the stuff runs in a data center 1,000 or 2,000 miles away from you, or whether it's actually running on a server just right next to you. So you will see that a lot of the tools we have and the way we build them, how they integrate with the tools you already know and love today, just keeps you being productive. And also how we have a large suite of very open and flexible tools where you can go and reuse all the things you know today, whether it being programming languages, like the one Kamal just mentioned earlier, if you're developing in Java, in Go, Node.js, C#, we're there to support you, and you can bring those tools with you when you want to develop for the cloud. And what we typically see today is that in a lot of development teams, we start to have these mixed environments. Like, you might have some .NET developers, love the Windows, love the Visual Studio, very productive, done it for a lot of years. And you might have some other people coming in, bringing new technologies to the team. Like, in a typical web scenario, you might have front-end developers working on Macintosh, or I guess it's just called Mac today. They can run Visual Studio. They have their own editors. They have other stuff that they do. So how do you get these mixed team environment to work together and still be productive, and doing that together with the cloud? That's also one of the things we're focusing on helping you with today. So we release a lot of stuff. And this is just to give you sort of a, well, maybe just to show you that there is a lot, not necessarily to show you all that there is. But the suite of developer tools and SDKs that we have for you is very broad. There's a lot you can do without leaving Visual Studio. You can set up resources through Azure Resource Manager. We have tools that help you create ARM templates to deploy and provision resources in Azure. You can restart servers directly from within Inside Visual Studio using Cloud Explorer and using the features the Cloud Explorer gives to you to interact with the servers, with the resources that you have running in Azure. You can even debug stuff that runs in Azure. You can remotely attach a debugger to a website or web application running in web services, or you could remotely debug Service Fabric services if you're running those in Azure. All of this you do with Inside Visual Studio, the same way you would expect it to work if your application were running on a server right next to you. We also provide a rich set of local emulations if you have specific scenarios where you want to develop for the cloud, but you need to develop by being offline. So some of our services in Azure are available to run locally on your dev machine. We have Storage Emulator. We have IIS Express to help you run web applications. And actually, even Service Fabric has a local development mode where you don't need an Azure service to run it. And when you need to interact with all those Azure services that you use as part of your applications, being it storage, being it cache, whatever, we have all of these different language SDKs. So we support you in a lot of different languages that you choose to use from within your applications. So if you're writing a web API to serve some files off storage or something else, whether you're writing that web API in C# using .NET or Node.js, you decide. We have the tools and we have the SDK that makes that an easy job for you to do. And when we come to command line tools, we also have a few different options. If you want to automate tasks and you have stuff you need to script, you can either use the Azure command line interface that Kamal will show us later. We have a new preview release of ACL. Oh, sorry, AC, it's called now?
CLI.
CLI, yeah, it's AC, CLI, yeah. Yeah, you dig into that. But we also have PowerShell options if that's what you want to use. And finally, we have a set of standalone tools for specific tasks, being the Microsoft Azure Storage Explorer, which is a cross-platform tool that runs across Linux, Mac, Windows, and just helps you easily interact with storage accounts. You can work with blobs, tables, files, and even queues. And we even run a service in Azure also, the Dev Test Lab, which is a place where you can go and spin up servers. We have some functionality there to help make sure that your servers don't run overnight when you don't develop, or if you do develop, you could keep them running if that's what you're doing at night. But the Dev Test Lab is meant for you to be easily provision development machines and machines you need in your development cycle. So our customers, and hopefully you're among, you're getting great benefits from using Azure. And we often hear that this integrated tooling story that we have is a great benefit to you. ClickView is one of the customers that we have. It's an Australian-based company who provide video streaming services to schools through the cloud. They call themselves the Netflix of education. ClickView, they have been building applications for the cloud, and it's given them some possibilities that they didn't have otherwise. They're able to scale out and deploy and offer their services on a global scale now, as opposed to what they did before. Developers, they're using Visual Studio tools seamlessly, and they continue to build out this cloud-native application pattern that they have. And this is a core key to their business and how the whole business can expand. So our aim with this session today is that you got some great insights and overview into how you and your daily job and your company can do the same, get the benefits of our tools, and get the benefits of the cloud that will go and support your business. So we're going to use the health clinic BIS application. Some of you probably saw some of that in Scott Hanselman's general session yesterday. The reason why we've chosen the health BIS application to run through our demos is that it's one of these cloud-native applications. So the scenario, the business scenario, is that the health clinic BIS, it's sort of a doctor practice. They are offering healthcare preventive care. And they have this application that help patients and doctors interact, check progress at the clinic. They have some specific clinic administration websites And they have a lot of apps and tools that integrate into all the services. So why we call it a cloud-native app? Well, we're going to focus on some of the core components that's part of this application. So we have some core services in the application, some web applications, mobile apps that runs, mobile app backends that runs in Azure. We have a public website. We have this private website, the Clinic Admin Web. And as you can see, we have different technologies that are part of this setup. Like the single page application we're using for the Clinic Admin, that's an Angular application. The web app that we have running as backend, as web API, is built in ASP. It's actually built in ASP.NET Core today with some services. So different technologies and different development tools involved in this. Now, if we look at the whole, the application as a whole, you can see there's all these different applications running on phones, running on other devices that are made specifically to the different personas that interact with the system, like doctors, being patients, being receptionists, and they all have different these different needs for their applications, where they should run and how they should run. And it actually even integrates some things like bands and Apple Watch as well. So this cloud-native pattern on having a lot of stuff running on a lot of different devices, a lot of different places, written with a lot of different technologies, it's one of the patterns of what we call a cloud-native application. So let's look at some demonstration on how some of the tools work today. So here we are, Visual Studio 2015. I have the Azure SDK installed on this Windows 10 machine, this Windows 10 laptop. So probably what we want to start out with building out an application like this is you have a lot of different Azure resources that you need to provision and you need to deploy. The way we do that in Azure is through what we call the Azure Resource Manager, or ARM. Azure's Resource Manager is the endpoint in Azure that goes and provisions and configures all the different resources that you're using. In order for you to provide the configuration of the resources that you need, we create what we call ARM templates. An ARM template is basically just a JSON document describing the different resources that you want to provision in Azure. So in Visual Studio, we have some tools that help you create and work with ARM templates, and this is what I'm going to show you here to begin with. Now, typically, when you want to work with ARM templates, you probably want to go out and find a quick start sample that sort of gets you started, because ARM templates quickly, there's a lot of things you need to provide in an ARM template, and they quickly become very large. So go look for samples, and go look for different tutorials that we have to get you started with ARM. But once you have that ARM template loaded into Visual Studio and you want to work with it, we have some tooling that helps you. So an ARM template consists of three core components. First of all, there is a set of parameters that you can specify. So parameters is a set of inputs that the ARM template expects you to give it once you do your deployment. We have a set of variables that are basically reusable throughout the ARM template. And finally, we have the section that describes the actual Azure resources that we want to provision. And as you can see, just this template I have is almost 500 lines long, so it's fairly complex. So to help you navigate the template and easily work with it in Visual Studio, we've built something we call the JSON outline. So the JSON outline window reads the ARM template that's open in Visual Studio, and it just helps you easily navigate and identify the resources that you have specified in it. There's even a way for you to add new resources, and we have some snippets that makes that an easy experience for you. But let's look at how some of these things are defined. So first of all, we can go and look at the website that we need for our service. So let me see if I can just, there you go. So this is the JSON part that specifies the website we want to have running. As you can see, one of the properties that we need to hand over to the resource manager is the name of the website. In this case, we're simply just referencing one of the variables that we put into the template. So this is one called website name. So we can go over here in the JSON outline view. We pick that, the website name. And you can see we're using some of the functions that the resource manager provides us. So in this case, we're basically just calculating the name based on concatenation of the string website and some unique string that's being generated in deployment time. And this is just helping solving us one of the issues that you don't get name conflicts when you try to provision resources in Azure, which is actually one of the more common deployment issues that people have. So we're building some functions to make it easy for you to make sure these things are unique. We can also see from the SQL server that we have specified here that we want to have a database set up. And basically, the database name is an input that we give as a parameter to our template. So if we go and look at the parameter definition, it's basically just saying, well, input a string as the database name, and we're good to go. The way that this works together, or can be used together, is if we go back and look at our website, we actually go and we stamp a default connection, which is a SQL Server connection string, as a property on the website that we create in Azure. And the way that we calculate that connection string is actually using stuff like the database name, as we give as a parameter, even the admin username and stuff that's get in. So you can see we have this great function where we go and we concatenate some strings that we put in, but we also use a reference to the SQL server. We use the SQL server name that we input. So in that sense, we make sure that this ARM template that we build out is all generic, and everything that's specific about a given deployment is passed in through parameters. So what we also provide is an easy way for you to deploy stuff directly from Visual Studio to Azure. You can just, if you just want to deploy and test it out, you can actually do some validation in here, but you can also just go ahead and do a deployment. So let me just kick off a new deployment. Once you do that, you get this dialog that sort of gives you a nice guided experience on how to make sure that you input all the information that's needed for you to set up all the resources. So I can log in, I can choose my subscription, I can go in, I can choose an existing resource group or create a new one. For those of you who don't know the concept of resource group, it's basically just a management point in Azure where you can group your resources. And typically you use resource groups to do access control. So a group of people can only read from a resource group. Other people might be able to add or delete resources within a resource group. So it's a nice management encapsulation of the thing that you provision into Azure. I pick my template from the solution I've opened, and I pick my parameters by it. I can go in directly here in this guide to wizard, and simply just, we have a UI that understands and reads the parameter files. So it makes a nice and easy experience to make sure that I actually input the relevant and right parameters that I need to. One of the things I want to call out here is that you often find yourself in a situation where you need to pass in secrets as parameters. In this case, we need an admin password for the database. And one of the great features we have in the resource manager now is we can integrate that with Key Vault. So Azure Key Vault is an Azure service where you can go and store secrets and keys. And they're stored inside our Azure data centers in these hardware security modules. So basically, the scenario here is that I can go and reference a password that somebody put into that key vault that I don't know, but Azure Resource Manager will go and use that for my database once it's created. So in this case, I just go and reference my key vault that's already set up in Azure, and I go and kick the, I go and select the relevant key vault secret that I want to use. And the way that this ends up in the parameters files is you can see that my administrator password is not a clear text password that we store in the parameters files. It's just a reference to that secret that's already into Key Vault. So again, we have secure parameters files, and we can store these, and we can reuse them in different scenarios for when we want to provision our resources. Okay, so enough about resource templates, enough about creating all our resources in Azure. And let's look a bit at the actual web application. So we are still with inside Visual Studio, and I've now opened the solution, which contains the different components that's part of the core web services that I showed you earlier on, as part of our health clinic application. And I'm not going to go into specifics as of how this application is actually built. We're going to look a little bit at some code later on. But it's just, in this case, it's actually an ASP.NET Core. It could have been an ASP.NET 5 application. A regular web application has some API, and it has this Angular front end. So what I can do when I have my application set up in Visual Studio is I can easily go ahead and I can publish this. And I can publish this directly into Azure from within inside Visual Studio. So again, we have a nice guided experience with Dialogs to help you make sure that you get everything right. So in this case, I choose to deploy this to an Azure app service. I get to pick my subscriptions. I choose to pivot the view and resource groups. And I can actually go down here and I can just choose my website. So one of the things that we do for you in Visual Studio is we go and pick up all the information from the website that's needed to actually create a successful deployment. So stuff like server names, site names, username, password, it's all there for you. You don't have to worry about that. What we also do is that we go and look at the code that we have in Visual Studio, and we make sure that we choose a relevant, typically the release configuration for a build, but that we also put in the target framework that the website needs to know as to what application should it expect that you are going to publish and that it will run. In this case, you can see it picked up that this is the .NET Core application. So we don't have to do any configuration on the web app site to actually have this application running. And finally, what it also does, it is actually knows about the connection string that we put in. So we can go and we can change the connection string. And what this actually does is you use the connection string that you saw back in the ARM template that we provisioned to the website. So all of these things sort of comes together. You don't have to worry about that. You just check this box, and your connection string is actually being used at runtime. Finally, you can do a preview, and you can save these deployment profile, and you can go and use that if you have some automated continuous deployment scenario at one point. So once you have your resources up and running in Azure, you also have the ability to directly interact with those from within inside Visual Studio. Cloud Explorer, as you can see here on the left-hand side, is one way of doing that. It's actually I think it's the most complete way of doing that we have in Visual Studio. Again, Cloud Explorer, I go and hook up my account to Azure. I choose the subscriptions I want to look at. I can choose to either pivot this on a resource group view or just a resource type view. And you can see all the different resources that we know and understand in Visual Studio and that you can go and interact with directly here. So for instance, if we look at the application that we have already running in Azure, and we go and look at the website, there is some direct integration you can do here. Like, you can attach a debugger to the running instance of this application in Azure, and you can start debugging once you have the source code loaded in Visual Studio. You can even go and stream your logs down. So as people use the website and you see the log, you get them streamed down into Visual Studio. You can also just download the logs directly from here. So depending on what kind of resources you're actually interacting with from Visual Studio, you have this different set of actions there. We can also, from here, go into the Azure portal. And we'll just make sure that we'll take you directly into, once I get there, with a few redirects, that we actually take you to the relevant blades within inside the Azure portal for that specific resource. So what you can see here is the website, and you see all of the great features that's part of the website. And if you want to do some debug configurations and settings of those, you're able to do that here. What you can also do in the portal is you can build out these dashboards. So in this case, I've just built out a dashboard for my application, and I've chosen to put some, I don't know if we call them widgets or tiles, but I've put some parts in here that actually gives me some quick glance, some traffic and health information. And if you heard about the Azure monitoring being announced yesterday, Azure monitoring is going to really enrich the pictures and the insights you can get directly from the portal here. So that's a little bit about how Visual Studio interacts directly with Azure. And that's great when you're developing and you're testing things out and you want to touch your resources and so on and so forth. But once you get started with this development process, you probably fairly quickly you want to transition into have something more automated. Like you want to have your source control in place. Probably that's the first thing you want to do. But at one point in time, you want to have your build to run continuously. And you probably also want some great way of continuously deploying the applications that you're writing. So to bind these things together, Visual Studio Team Services is a great solution. Visual Studio Team Services runs in the cloud, and it helps you take care of everything from structuring your work, holding your source code, making sure you can do your build, and actually also deploying things. So in Visual Studio Team Services, I quickly build out a dashboard here that I can do my own, and I get some great overview of the different work I have to do with the application. I can actually see what's being released and what's running in my test and production environment. I can see the health of my builds running here. And I can go and see the different commits that people actually did to our Git repo. Visual Studio Team Services supports both Git and Visual Studio source control. In this case, I've chosen to use Git as the repo for my code. So when I get this overview of my files with inside VSTS and I can see the Git repo, I can get a nice history overview of the commits that people have made. And if I want to look at my builds, you see I have three different build definitions set up. Some of them has run a bit more than others, but I get this nice overview of what's actually running good. And I can even see what the different updates or commits that actually triggered those builds. And what I've also done is I've automated my release process. Now, part of the release process could have been configuring Azure resources using the ARM templates that I originally created. I haven't done this in this example. I'm simply just deploying my web application. But one of the things you should be able to see here once it loads Let's try to do a refresh. There you go. You can see an overview of the different releases that I've done. And you can actually see that some of my releases has only gone through the test environment, and I wasn't happy about that, so we created a new release test and actually prove it to production. So if we try to take a look at one of these releases, what I can see is that this is actually the release currently running in test. It's not been approved to go into production yet. But what I can do is I can go back and I can track the build from this current running release. I can see some great information about the build, and I can see the history of the commits, and I can see the last commit that triggered the build. And I can actually go and see the specific changes in the source code that was part of that commit. So you get this great insight right from what's actually running through how did it got built and what are the actual code changes that it made. So I guess this was just to give you this feeling of how we can get started with things from directly in Visual Studio. Specifying what Azure resources we want to use, put you on a path of using infrastructure as a code to make it easy for you to automate the process. We showed you how you from within inside Visual Studio directly can go and attach to Azure. You can remotely debug, deploy, some of those good things. And also how Visual Studio Team Service sort of helped you build all of that together so you get into this great integrated process of being able to continuously integrate and deliver your software code. So I hand it over to you, Kamal.
Yep. Thanks, Mikkel. So far, can we switch to the slides? Yes. So basically what Mikkel talked about so far was the development experience. What I want to talk about is command line. How do you use automation and scripting? Now, command line is obviously we support PowerShell for managing all your tasks on Azure. But in addition to PowerShell, we are also actually announcing yesterday, we announced this, a command line that works natively in Bash environment. So before I go into further and show you the Bash environment, how many people here use Bash in Linux or Unix or Mac? Maybe 15, 20 people. But I'm sure that you have other folks in your companies, organizations, who are more comfortable in Bash. So it is the thing that we are doing here is we are giving you a choice. Azure is open. Azure platform, you can. We want you to have Azure and not be worried that I am a Bash user, I'm a Linux user, I'm a Mac user, should I go to Azure or not? Yes, you can go to Azure. You can do everything that you can do from Windows and PowerShell from this Bash environment. PowerShell will still be very important, very powerful. PowerShell is also available on Unix and Mac now, but the environment within PowerShell and the concepts of PowerShell command line are different from Bash command line. There is muscle memory associated with people who use Bash commands. It is hard for them to get to PowerShell. So this is not to say that PowerShell is not there. PowerShell will continue to be there, very important, but we also want to reach out to people who are just used to doing commands and doing the tools in Bash environment or POSIX environments. So what we have here is this is an open source project that we just released into preview. We already had a command line in cross-platform command line that we call that was already available. This is the next release, next version of that, that we are moving, going into preview mode. This one will only support resource management-based services, ARM-based services. The current existing command line that we have will be there and will continue to be supported. If you want to use the old ASM-style services, then you will need to continue using that. Both of these command lines can be installed and work side-by-side within the same Bash shell. The command name is different, so there is no collision. You can actually share your credentials once you're logged in through one command line. You don't have to re-log in into the other command line. So that is some of those things that we have. Is this the clicker?
Yeah, just right.
Before I go and show you the demos on the command line, I just wanted to point out what we have done here. Why did we do this? The new command line is very native. It will have native installs for every platform. So if you are using Linux, you're using Mac, you're using Windows, you will have the command line install that you're used to. For example, for Linux, you'll have apt-get, brew, pip, yum, and MSI for Windows. Command line runs natively in Bash environment on those platforms, plus also on Windows. You can actually run it in the Windows command shell or using Bash tools on Windows 10 that are now available. It also has very native integration with other tools that people are used to in command lines, doing grep and awk and other things for search, and pipelining the output into another tools or redirection of the input and output, all those things will work natively. It is completely automated, optimized so that you can use it as a single commands in the Bash shell, or you can write it in a script. And you can actually do cron jobs and other things to schedule those scripts. So for example, some of the scenarios could be, I have 50 virtual machines, and before I go home on the weekend, I want to shut all of them down, and on Monday, I want to start them back up. So that you can do through a script command and just automate that through that. It is open source. We are completely open, and you can download the source code, or even we are going to be taking contributions on that. And it will stay very fresh. Obviously, we don't have full support for all the services yet, as we just moved into preview. But we are releasing it so that we can get feedback. We really want people who are used to doing commands in Bash and Linux environments or Mac environments. We want them to try it out, give us the feedback so that we can continue to improve it and move to a general release sometimes later in the year. So with that, let me actually give you a small lap around the command line and see, show you what commands you can do and how it works. Okay. All right. I hope you can see this. This is what you get when you install the command line, and the top level command is AZ. So as soon as you say AZ, it shows you all the commands that are available to you today. Obviously, this will be increasing as we build more support for other services on Azure. Today, we have services for you to manage your account, Active Directory. You can look at web apps, app services that Mikhail showed you. You can manage those through the command line. Obviously, the configuration of the environment as new modules release, you can just install those modules using the AZ component command. We have login, logout, network, everything here. So with that, let me actually show you a few commands and some of the productivity tools that we have with this working. So if I do clear my screen, the first command I want to show you is AZ login. How do you log in into your Azure environment? So when you say AZ login, what it does is it tells me to go to this website here and just enter this code. So I'm going to copy that and go to my website that I have open. And I copy that code, and it tells me to continue. And if I'm already logged in, that is fine. If I'm not logged in, it is going to ask me my user ID password and just log in. Once you have logged in there, that the credentials for that Azure account are stored on your client machine. And they stay there for about 30 days or 90 days, and we are trying to find out what is the right number of days, as long as you stay active in that on that machine. As long as you use this command line once a week or once a day, that credential will stay, not expire for 30 days, things like that. We are actually looking at increasing that to 90 days or something. So that would be some of the things that we would like to get feedback on. So what happened, now I'm logged in, and it actually shows me all the subscriptions that I have access to once I'm logged in. So that's automatically out there. So now what I can do here is AZ configure. Now, obviously, I have already set AZ configure on this machine before, but I just want to show you what that looks like. So it tells me, do I want to change my settings? And I say yes. And then I can change my default output. I can set the output to be just a table format or JSON format and things like that. I'm going to stay with the table format. And then if I want to enable the data collection so that we can see how people are using that. I'm going to say no for that for now. So that is done. Now that I have that, we have a very good help system integrated into the commands. So I can do VM help. So this shows me everything that I can do with the virtual machine commands in this command line. So basically what it shows is that these are all the subgroups within the VM. I can work with my image, I can work with my disk, I can work with containers on that virtual machine. These are the commands that I can do. I can start a virtual machine, I can stop a virtual machine, I can create a new virtual machine, I can capture the image, the snapshot of the virtual machine that is running and save it, things like that. So let's take a look at AZ VM list. Let me actually clear that so that you can, this goes under the top. So what that is doing is it is simply showing me all the virtual machines that I have running on my account and that I'm logged on to Azure. And this is the default format because I set the default format to be table, human readable table. But I can change that format to JSON. And that just sends me that output in a JSON file. The JSON file has all the information, all the properties about that virtual machine. And I can see all of that. This is interesting, but that's a lot of data to view in a command line. So what we have is once you have that output in the command line, I can redirect it or pipe it to another tool, which will let me query that output or work with that text file. So one of the tools that we are using is an open source tool called JPTerm. And this tool is actually written by Amazon. It is an open source tool. What it does is it allows you to query your JSON files. It is a useful tool just in case outside of the command line or out of Azure. Just if you're working with JSON, you can query things and look at stuff like that. So basically, let me build a query here. And instead of looking at the whole file, all I want to do is I want to look at the name property. And on the right side, you see the output of that. And I also want to look at the operating system type of that virtual machine. And I know that that is an embedded property in that JSON file. As long as I know the structure, I can build that query. So that is the top-level node storage profile. Under that, there is a node called OS disk. Under that, there is a property called OS type. So that is the query that it lets me select two properties out of that JSON file. Now, what I can do is I can actually copy that query, and actually I can run it natively in my command line. So over here is the same VM list output from Azure, and I can say, instead of giving me the whole JSON file, run this query on the output that I'm getting from the virtual machine list command. And that returns me that data. So basically, we are supporting the open source libraries and tools and query systems in our command line so that you can work with those small learning curve and things like that. Okay, so that's that. Let us also look at some other things that we have done here to help it make it a little bit more productive environment. So there is a command, azvm show, and let me take a look at the help file for that. So this is another way to look at your virtual machine. And as you can see, the required arguments for that is the name of the virtual machine and the resource group, the name of the resource group that it is running in. So what I can do is go back to that. I know that it needs a resource group name. And the argument for that can be dash dash resource group or dash G. So I'm using dash G, but I don't remember the name of the resource groups. So instead of remembering it back, I just do tab twice. And that what that does is it goes to Azure and looks up all the resource groups that I have and shows them to me. So now that I have that, I see there is a resource group named development, and I can say dev and tab again, and it does the statement completion and shows me that group name. Same thing, inside that group name, there are virtual machines. If there is, it will show me those virtual machines as soon as I say tab. So it shows me that, I can run the command, and I get the output. So those are some of the productivity tools that we have done for this. So that's good. Now let's go back and show how this kind of relates to what Mikkel was showing in the website that he just built. So what can you do with Azure websites through the command line? So let me see Azure App Service and do a help on that. App Service is a top-level command. It has two subgroups called plan and the web. Web is the one that I'm going to use because that shows me all the websites that I have running on Azure in the App Services. So on the web, if I see, the commands that are available to me are configuration of the website, deployment of the website. I can have Git configured so that I can, this is my development machine, I can change everything in the source code and just do Git push to that website. I can enable that directly from the command line. I can also do log. I can look at the logs of the website. So let's take a look at that command. So, and there is a log set command. And the log set command basically lets me set my application logs to on or off. It can set what kind of web server logging I want. Do I want the logs to go to a file system or go to storage blobs or just turn them off? I can also change the level of logging. I just want the error information or warning information or all kinds of information, those kind of things. So I've already set that up. And now I want to go and turn the logs so that they can stream into my command line. So in order to do that, I need to know the name of the website, right? So what I'm going to do is azvm AZ App Service web list, and I know there is a I know the resource group name that it is running in, health clinic demo. And if I look at this output, it should show me all the web services that are running in that. And this is not a very useful output format because it's in table and some of those names are long, so it kind of wraps around the command, so this is not good. So instead, I'm going to get it in a JSON file. So if I do the JSON file, it gives me a lot of data. Not very useful again. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to just, instead of looking at the whole thing, I'm going to use the Linux command grep and look for the lines where it is, where there is a name. And that shows me the name of that website that I'm looking for. So this is the website I look for. Now I can set my log, etc., over here. And let's see. Okay. There's W in front of that, and I can say instead of list, log tail. And once I've done that, it should start logging and streaming those things back into my website. So you're now connected to that website. And if I go and refresh the website, it should start showing the logs, stream them directly into my command line. So let's do that a couple of times. There's a little bit of a lag here, but that should come streaming down. Not only it should come streaming down, I can also download and save that log file on my client machine through the command line. I can also search through that. There it is. Everything that is happening. So you see the HTTP get traffic coming in, etc. So that is the command line that we have just announced yesterday. Obviously, you can do the same things in PowerShell. But for folks who are not PowerShell users, are used to doing Bash and POSIX style, Unix style command lines, this is what we hope that this will let them use Azure and manage them from the tools that they love. We love giving you the choice, whether it is Visual Studio, whether it is open source development tools, the SDK, the languages, etc., or the command line. That is the goal and should be really very productive environment to manage these Azure environments from any tool that you need. So back to Mikhail.
Yep. Thanks, Kamal. This looks a lot like Matrix. I don't know. It's not streaming in.
Yeah.
If we get the performance of the streaming going, we really have something now.
Yeah.
Okay. So, changed. Five. So that was the Azure command line interface version 2.0 preview. Now, we talked about a little bit about earlier that you have these mixed development teams out there. And now you saw how on a Mac and Linux, you also have great CLI. It actually also runs in Windows. But if that's your tool of choice, that's the one you can go with. But how do you make sure that you get very productive across these dev sets up? We have some people working on a Mac, some people working on Windows, some people using Visual Studio, other people doing maybe VS Code or something else. Let's try to look at a little scenario here from our application. So I'm back in Visual Studio now on my Windows 10. And what we want to do with this application, let me just quickly show you. Now, this is the public website that we have. And we have as part of this application, let me do this in prod instead. So as part of this application, we have this, this clinic admin website, which is a place where you can log in. And you can see some information about pages and patients and doctors. And you can see some dashboard cloud clinic performances. And, you know, there is also this daily report thing, but it's not quite there yet. So we want to go ahead and implement that. The way that our application is set up, the way that we want to do this, sort of in a typical Azure way or cloud way. So we have this ASP.NET Core MVC that is sort of the whole shell of the web application that we have. Within that, we actually have a front end that's written in Angular. And it turns out that the front end developer in our team actually likes to work on a Mac. So it's front end development on a Mac. And then there is an API that we want to expose those daily reports through. But the API, that's sort of the .NET guy's business. So he's doing the web API, ASP.NET Core. He works on his Windows machine. He works in Visual Studio. And finally, the files, we just put them into a storage account in Azure. So they sit there. It's a very cheap option to store files. So basically, the web API needs to go and interact with that storage account. So let's start to look at the Visual Studio part of it, or the API part of this. So what I've done is, in my API controllers in this application, we implemented this new data report controller. It's a very simple controller. It implements one method. You can post an HTTP, or you can request an HTTP GET to this controller, and it will just give you back the list of files that's in the storage account. So the way that we implemented this code is that we're using the Azure SDK and following the pattern of how you actually interact with storage accounts. So we instantiate the storage account. We need something called a Cloud Blob client. We need something called a Cloud Blob container. And then we can actually use that container to go and iterate and get a list of all the blobs that we have in that storage account. Again, this is written in C# because that's what we want to do. You could have, with the SDKs we have, written this in Node.js, Python, Go, Ruby, whatever you prefer. So I already have this up and running here on my local machine, and I'm actually debugging this. You can see I'm not on the local host. So we can go ahead and we can try to call that API. And what we see is that we just get back an empty array of nothing, basically. So let's try and put a few files up into the storage account and see how this actually works. Now, we told you early on that we had this standalone tool, a thing called Microsoft Azure Storage Explorer. Some of you might have seen it before. But it's just a very easy way of interacting with storage and work with that. So in this case, I'm already hooked up here to my subscription, and I have my different storage accounts. I'm just going to the storage account that we're working with in this specific scenario. You can see we support both blob containers and files and queues and tables. So in this specific example, we just put the files into a blob container that we call default. And as you can see, it's empty currently. Now, I had a few documents or a few reports already uploaded. They're in another container in the same storage account. So I can easily just go and copy those using this tool from one container into another. And as you can see, my file just, it's just like working with File Explorer, basically. It just makes you easily handle those files. So let's go back and try and refresh the API. And as you can see, we get some nice JSON out describing the files that I now have in my storage account. So I get a URI, a base URI. I get some size information. I get the name somewhere. Here you go. I get the name of my file and so on and so forth. I'm using a Chrome plugin to just make the JSON look pretty. So it's not just a... It's not the matrix one from the CLI, I guess. Okay, so I'm done with my API. I can see it works. I can go ahead and I can check my changes into our dev branch. I can go ahead and let it build, and I can actually push this all the way through to production. Nobody needs to know that it sits out there, but the API is there and it actually works. So that's all nice. Now let's try to switch over to the front end guy. And this is going to be interesting. Just. We have too many laptops up here. Just a second. So there you go. Whoops. So now I'm on my Mac. And now I'm that front-end developer in our group that is doing the Angular part of this. So I need to implement some front-end to actually surface those files that the API gives to us. I'm in a terminal here. So I just did a git pull, and I just pulled down all the source code from VSTS, from the team services, running in the dev branch that the Windows guy just checked in his changes to. So I can just go ahead and I can start Visual Studio Code from here. If I start Visual Studio Code and pass in a punctuation or a dot, I'll actually tell Visual Studio Code to go ahead and open the directory and the files that's in the directory that I'm already in from the terminal. So what that means is the Visual Studio is actually giving this. So Visual Studio doesn't have like Visual Studio, Visual Studio Code doesn't have the concept of solutions and projects like you have in Visual Studio. So basically what you're seeing is just the directory structure and the individual files that we have in there. So since this is a ASP.NET Core app, I can actually run it on my Mac. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to use this integrated terminal that we have in Visual Studio Code, and I'll just run this ASP.NET Core C# application on my Mac. So as you can see, it's up and running on port 5000. So let's just try and browse to that. And let's just check if the API is actually there. And it is. So I got the right branch down. I got the build. And you can actually see I'm using the same API running locally on my Mac that I was running locally on the Windows machine before. So that's all nice. Now, what I want to do for my front end is, as I said, this is written in Angular. So I have this controller that's part of my application structure in Angular. And that controller is basically just responsible for pushing some data into a view model that I can then go and expose through my templates, my HTML templates. So I'm just doing here, I'm just posting in a hello world string, and you can see from the HTML template that I'm just using, rendering whatever information is put into the text part of that view model. So I can go ahead and see how that looks now. So if I go and log in. So again, this is all running locally on my Mac. It's the same code that ran on my Windows machine. And you can see we just have this Hello World implementation. So Visual Studio Code has some functionality and understands different ways of different tools that you would typically use in a scenario like this. So when I'm building my Angular application, I'm actually using Gulp to run some tasks to minify and combine some of my JavaScripts. So what I can do now in Visual Studio to just make it an easy way, an easy experience for me to iterate around my changes, is I can start what we call a Gulp task, a watch task. Basically what it does is that it watches the file system changes. So as I go and change my JavaScripts and HTML files, it actually goes ahead and do the bundle and the minification of my files, the equivalent of building the application, so I get this instant update. So we can just do the usually hello ignite. And as you can see, my watch job just run because it knows that I changed the file. Actually, in Visual Studio, I don't even have to save the file. Visual Studio can look for file changes and for changes in the editor, and we go and submit the file to this file system. So if you go and refresh, and I get the new data rendered in my browser. So this is a very easy way for me to quickly iterate around this front end develop that I'm doing here. Okay, so another thing that let me just terminate my running task. Another thing that Visual Studio Code understands is Git. So now I just want to jump ahead to a branch where I actually have the finished code. I could go into a terminal, I could do a git checkout, and then go into the other branch. I could also just directly, from an inside Visual Studio Code, change my branch. Before I change the branch, I just need to revert my changes. And as you can see, Visual Studio Code already knows. I'm getting that wrong all the time. Visual Studio Code already knows about the branches that I have. So basically, I just want to switch to my finished branch. And as you can see, my files just instantly updates in Visual Studio Code. So this is actually the final implementation that was in this other branch. So what you can see now is that my Angular controller is now doing some more stuff to populate the data model for my view. And what it's using is it's using a little service that we've written. And that service is basically just responsible for calling the API that we implemented to HTTP. And then the handling of the JSON document and modeling into a view model is done by the controller. And finally, you can see my view here is now referencing these file objects that I get as part of my view model from the controller. So let's go ahead and just run the gulp task to make sure that we get everything set up. You probably noticed I just have my .NET Core application still running in the background, right? There's no .NET Core changes here, so I don't need to recompile, I don't need to restart. It's just sitting there and running in the background. Everything that I'm doing now is only working with that single page application. That's the JavaScript and HTML part of it. So let's try and see if the changes came through. And voila, there you go. We have the implementation, and we're actually showing those files that we uploaded in the store account. So we're consuming that API written in C# in Visual Studio on Windows with the JavaScript and HTML that we did in Visual Studio Code on my Mac. Now, one of the things that I wanted to check, being a very considered front-end developer, is, well, two documents might look good, right? But what if I had, I don't know, 10 documents or so? So just as I did on my Windows machine, I can run the same Microsoft Azure Storage Explorer on my Mac. So it's the same tool, runs across both platforms. So I can just go down into the same storage account, into the same container. And I can just, let's try to just take the rest of these reports that we have. Copy these over. You can see I got some, you know, conflicts because they were already there. It's fine, just copy and replace whatever is there. Cloud Explorer taking care of that. And if I go and I reload, I can now check my front end and how that all looks against this scenario where I have more files. So that's basically it. I'm done with my front end development. I would by now be able to go and do the Git check-in. I could initiate a build and a release in VSTS, and I can actually go and see this everything flowing through to my production environment. So, that was just a brief example of this scenario of working across different platforms and how this unified architecture can actually come together, even though we have these different technologies that we're using. We have these tools that will support you in those scenarios. So as we probably said a few times now, you as a developer, whatever preferences you have in terms of the tools you're using, whatever platform you're on, we have paths that will lead all of you to Azure. So you can access the cloud, and you can make sure that you get all the benefits and speed off your development and getting to production using the existing skills you have for the languages and the tools you know and love. So it's Visual Studio and C#, whether you're used to using CLI on a Mac, whether it's Visual Studio Code on a Mac, or even .NET Core on Mac or Windows, we're there all the way for you. So if you want to get started with Azure, please make sure that you check out some of the Azure benefits that we have. Now, we have something we call Visual Studio Dev Essentials, which is a free subscription, meaning that you get $24 monthly in Azure credit by joining the Visual Studio Dev Essentials. For those $25 a month, you can actually run up to 50 websites in a database. So most of what we showed you from the Health Clinic biz sample, you'll be able to run in a subscription like this. And actually, we'll provide a link for the sample where you can download the code after this and go work with it. If you're fortunate enough to have a real Visual Studio subscription, either pay through licenses through the partner network, BizSpark programs, you get even more Azure credit to get started. You can get up to $150 a month. We're actually supposed to run 500 websites, with quite a bit of websites to overlook as a developer. The only thing is that these are personal accounts. It's accounts that are meant to try out and develop stuff. It's not meant to run things in production. I might run a Minecraft server or two out there, I guess. I know from my colleagues that's a popular choice. So make sure you go ahead and do that so you can get started with Azure and get used to how working with the cloud is. So final message, use the tools you know and you love. Start building cloud apps today. We have some great reference to our tools and the scenario up there. I know you can go and download the PowerPoint slides afterwards, or you can take a picture now. As people
are doing. Do stop by our booth if you need any of these demos, more details, or have scenarios that you want to discuss, like what is the best thing. We are in the expo under the cloud and web development area. There are a couple of other things that we can show you, like the SDKs and things like that that we couldn't cover. For example, the new C# SDK actually implements really nice patterns. For example, the create virtual machine call is very, very intuitive. And it takes away a lot of the guesswork of which parameters are required, which parameters are optional, what is it that I need to do to just get a virtual machine running and going. This is what we call Fluent API. That's a pattern in C# and also in Java. So both our Java and C# SDKs kind of implement this. We are trying to make these SDKs very native and idiomatic. So whatever the idioms in each language, we want to use them so that the language developers in that language feel native and feel like don't have to learn a new thing. And we want to make sure that the Azure SDK, the Azure commands just flow through there. So this is just an example. We couldn't go into the details, but if you want to stop by and see this working in Visual Studio or working with Java and IntelliJ or Eclipse, we have those demos up there. So yeah, and also go ahead and try the CLI, provide us some feedback. If you don't do it yourself, if you have other folks in your organizations who use Bash or Unix command shells, it will be great to have that out. Thanks. What was that? One?
I think it's five. Okay. But I think it's only the usual evaluation thing that's left.
Yeah. So great, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.